Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for December 31st, 2007, and on this episode we have an interview with Stephen Lewis Grush. He will be talking to Tom Williams about his starring role in Steppenwolf's Good Boys and True. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is from a Steppenwolf production of Good Boys and True. He is the star of the show. His name is Stephen Lewis Grush. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Tell us about this play. You are one of the principals. It's supposed to be set in 1988. Mm-hmm. You had a prep school, right?
That's right, yeah.
So tell us about it.
Well, the part that I play, Brandon Hardy, he's sort of a exceptional student and exceptional athlete, kind of the American dream sort of kid, somebody that everyone wants their son to be.
He's the all-American boy.
Huh? He is, absolutely. Captain of the football team, starting on the basketball team. We find out throughout the course of the play that he's just been accepted to Dartmouth, a very prestigious school, so... kind of has his future laid out for him.
He's a member of the sort of the elite or the upper class.
Absolutely.
Parents are doctors, mm-hmm. or they're wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
So he's that privileged dream that everyone wishes they had for that.
Absolutely.
Kind of family.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the play does sort of examine that kind of upper echelons of American society and kind of the family politics that surround that sort of the expectations of that world. And how we build them up and how we kind of sometimes find out that it's not everything that it seems. So,
yes. One of the things that the play covers is kind of a relationship with you and your mother.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, it is very much a mother-son play.
And your mother is Martha Levy.
That's right.
And she's, of course, the artistic director at Steppenwolf. Tell us how that must have been to play that.
Oh gosh, I mean, it's pretty incredible. I mean, where would I start? So it's my second show at Steppenwolf. My first show, I was an intern while I was in school at Roosevelt University, and so it being this is my first real role here at this theater, and to kind of come in and be working with the with the big dogs, it was a little intimidating. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I heard, maybe you can correct this, I heard a rumor that Martha, when she read the play, she said, "We have to do this," and on the next breath, that you have to be in it.
Oh, well, I wasn't there for the conversation, but that's the rumor.
That's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's got to make you feel good.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, Martha's an incredibly gracious actor. She's very... very giving, so she's definitely the first to give a compliment on someone else's work. She's very gracious in that sense. So
she's also one of the smartest
people
when you talk to.
Absolutely.
Talk to her about 2 seconds, you realize, wow, this lady really knows her stuff.
Absolutely.
So let's go on a little bit more of the story, as much as we can give away, because I want to let everyone know that there is a mystery element to this that we're just not going to give away, because it wouldn't be right to do
wouldn't
that.
It wouldn't be fair. It would not be fair to the play.
But tell us some of the things you can. All right, the mother comes to see the coach,
mm-hmm.
and you have a friend.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We sort of open up with a conversation between Martha Levy's character, Elizabeth Hardy, my mother, sitting in with the coach of the football team, and he reveals to her that he found a... very sexually explicit tape on campus that shows two young people engaging. I believe the text refers to it as graphic sexual acts. And
I think that is the term.
That is a term. And that the boy on the tape is obscured. You can't really see the identity of the boy. It's his back and shoulders, and he does a great deal to keep his face off camera. Whereas the girl is very identifiable. She's right in the forefront. And so even though no one knows the identity of this young girl, it wouldn't be too hard to figure out, but the boy is a mystery. And but just by the context of it, the coach believes that it is her son, Brandon. So it sort of propels us right into this action of, you know, who done it? Is it him? Is it not him?
And the other element that's kind of, I thought, well crafted was, is it really a cover up?
Mm-hmm.
And you can see how these people were sort of indirectly, but very clearly wanting to cover this up.
Sure.
The coach doesn't want to really take it up to the Jesuits mm-hmm. that run the school, mm-hmm. and of course Martha doesn't want any scandal with her son and the family.
Oh, absolutely, you know, and it is, how far will you go to protect your own? The coach of the football team is an old high school friend of Brandon's father, and so he has enough of a relationship with Elizabeth, the mother, to call her directly and ask her to come by the office and to sort of handle it outside of the structure of authority in the school. They kind of want to handle it off the radar. So,
which, as we've seen with things that happened at Duke University and some other things,
sure.
that
sure.
this is one of the things that they try and do.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, yeah, and I think it's things like Duke University, but also I think that's a very common sort of human need to sort of protect your own, regardless of, you know, financial class or education or background or anything. You know, there is that sort of want to protect your family and your kind of your tribe. I guess.
I agree. But then there's another element that kind of gets thrown in, your relationship with your buddy,
mm-hmm.
with Justin,
Smith.
Played with Tim Rock.
Tim Rock,
yes. Another one of the young,
absolutely
up and coming actor. Yeah, he's a good guy.
Relationship ends up, we reveal kind of early on that they are more than just friends. They are actually secret lovers, which doesn't fit into this world very well.
Well, not at all.
Being especially...
especially in 1988.
Absolutely.
That people have to understand, at that time, coming out and having an open relationship mm-hmm. just wasn't done.
No, it was
even in the elite schools.
Yeah, it wasn't really an option at that point in time, especially in high school. They do talk about they're going to Dartmouth together,
and that your Justin character, your friend, he's pretty much open and out.
He is open, so he's a unique individual. He's very kind of strong character in the play, in the sense that he does have a grasp on his sexuality, and he does. He doesn't really place the kind of importance that a lot of other people in this world sort of carry with his homosexuality. So Brandon, on the other hand, not he sort of gives in to this social structure and is quite confused about his sexuality. He has a girlfriend that he's with all the time, all the games, all the dances, especially being the you know, captain of the football team and one of the starting players of the basketball team. He is sort of spearheading this culture. He is kind of a hood ornament of this whole culture. So for him to come out is just not even an option in this world.
Yeah, and if he had, I don't know what, I think it would have hurt the play quite a bit.
Oh, sure.
But anyhow, so that's part of the mystery, is you add this element.
Mm-hmm.
So now the show is kind of guessing all the way along. Where's this going?
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a few other little elements, and they're little, you see a glimpse of the family with the mother talking to your aunt in the play.
Yeah, Aunt Maddie, played by Kelly Simpkins.
Yeah, who did a terrific job.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so that kind of added another element. So mm-hmm. This play is strong on many levels.
Well, it's interesting. With the aunt character, she is a public school teacher, so she is in that sort of educational world, but kind of the opposite end of that, you know.
Yeah, she's more the middle class.
Absolutely.
A lady that has kind of the basic American mm-hmm. middle values. Mm-hmm.
And she's the one that kind of, from the beginning, sort of speaks out against this sort of behavior. They end up watching the tape together to figure out if Brandon is the culprit. And just have some really wonderful conversations about sort of class issues, and they do address all that. That's that kind of the difference between these kids who are going through the public school system and the this sort of elitist prep school system, and what kind of values rub off because of that.
Yeah, and of course,
or don't for that matter.
Yeah, that's true. But I like the work that Kelly O'Sullivan did too. He's playing the girl who's the real victim.
Absolutely.
And that was a thankless, tough role to do. But I thought she was terrific mm-hmm. in it.
Yeah, she. You know, we only get to see her twice, and two just fantastic scenes. I think this scene between her and Martha, where she does confront. She does confront the girl on the tape, I think is just brilliantly written, and just it's so subtle. And
it was beautifully acted by the two. It was one of the high moments of the play.
It really is, absolutely one of the high moments of the whole play. And just brings in these really stellar ideas that I think, and it boils down to a simple conversation between the two of them. And it's just so, it's layered very well, you know, so it's not smacking you over the head with these ideas. It's not preaching these ideas. It's just showing these real people in these circumstances, having a conversation. It's thrilling.
The flashbacks mm-hmm. that go, cause I think, you know, flashbacks are dangerous in theater.
They can be.
Yeah.
They can
and,
be dangerous. Yeah,
you know, we'll talk later about you as a playwright, but I'm sure when you took any playwriting courses, the rule one is don't do flashbacks.
Yeah, just show us the action, you know, give us the meat of it.
Yeah, and theater's always in the now. So, mm-hmm. But they made it work. You guys made it work.
They're sort of used as bookends. They're kind of these interesting little plot devices of once we have information that we need, we sort of go back to the beginning and sort of see just a little glimpse of how it got there, and then we're immediately thrust back into the present. So,
yeah, just like the scene when you meet the Cheryl character,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. when you go to the mall.
Yeah,
I thought that was well played out.
It's interesting, you know, having
you're this big charming guy,
sure.
and she's this the little nerdy girl. She can't believe the big football hero's actually talking to her.
She knows who the character is immediately before you know, previous of introductions and all that kind of stuff. And that seems a lot of fun to play out, just because the audience does have information that the characters don't necessarily have. So it is it seems to be a lot of fun for the audience. At least being up there, that seems to be one of the most audible scenes. I hear murmurs.
You hear the reaction.
Oh, everyone's.
Well,
everyone's
we all love the stars, and so many of us. You knew the big, you know, hero would be like growing up with Elvis and all of a sudden meeting him, you know, in a mall or something like that.
And in this world, in this immediate sort of place that they're all in this suburb of Washington, D.C., he is kind of painted in that sort of regard, this sort of local celebrity kind of thing. So.
Which talks a lot about the world in 1988.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, when a high school football player is this elite character.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I guess wealth has its privilege.
Because
to me, that's one of the things that the play is about.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But the mother-son relationships. In the scenes, which we're not going to give away the content, but you have some really powerful scenes in Act Two, which is really all about why what happens.
Yeah.
And folks, we're not going to tell you either one except to say that you got to see this play, because it's really a fresh look at a terrific story that I thought was well structured and with some good acting.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
But so tell us about playing those powerful scenes.
Oh, geez.
How do you mentally prepare for that?
How do you mentally prepare for it? Well, you know, everybody has their own their own craft, their own little way of going about it. I'm a fan of the school of sort of it's creating these contacts, creating these memories, and it was sort of interesting building that relationship with Martha, and kind of going back in my own head and sort of building a childhood, building adolescent years, and building a series of experiences. With this to strengthen this mother-son role, and I think it's really palpable once you get up there. You know, it's really kind of Martha's the type of actress that'll she will pick up anything you're putting down. So It's been pretty thrilling working with her so far.
So what have you learned from her?
What have I learned from her? I don't know. To listen, to really just be there in the moment and listen, and to not be afraid to just go there. Just try it out, and we'll see what happens. You know, it's been a really great rehearsal process in that sense. It's been fresh every time.
Well, it came through. I was there on the opening, mm-hmm. and I thought it came through, and it really made the whole play come, because you guys aren't the two characters aren't necessarily the warmest. It's kind of a cold relationship, isn't it? She's a tough, cold lady.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's sort of a comment on the world that they're in, and I think especially her being a doctor, being a surgeon, there is that sort of detachment that comes along with that.
Because we're not sure if she really loves you or not. Your character.
You think?
Yeah, early on.
Yeah,
it comes together.
But. Well, she, you know, actions do speak louder than words. Yeah. I think, you know, she does sort of run around in circles trying to pick up the pieces for her son. So,
and then to see you going through the character change from this smiley all American boy, mm-hmm. where you've got the world by the tail. I mean, there's nothing, you can do whatever you want.
Oh, there's no
question. All of a sudden, yeah. your world comes tumbling down and everything is threatened.
Yeah, bit by bit.
Yeah.
It's sort of watching all these people scramble around, you know,
yeah,
and sort of the change of trying to take responsibility for your actions and just sort of seeing the effect that it's having on the people in his life. You know, these things that he
He's kind of a cold character too.
He is in some ways, but also in the thing with Brandon that I played around a lot with is because he's a tough nut to crack. He is, but he wears different masks.
Yes, he does. Yeah,
his life.
It was a great acting turn on your part to be able to develop all these different Brandons.
Yeah,
at different
he becomes different people for the different people in his lives, and we all do to a certain extent. We all do in particular situations become a version of ourselves that is appropriate for that situation to very smaller degrees. But Brandon, on the other hand, is kind of like that on overdrive. When he's in the locker room and on the field, he's, you know, the pinnacle jock character. When he's alone with Justin in a bedroom, he's a very, you know, receptive and giving, loving person. When he's with his mother, he's exactly what he thinks that his mother wants him to be.
What about when he was with his girlfriend and the other young girl that he
mm-hmm.
met?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well,
he wasn't such a nice guy.
No, well, he gets what he wants, you know, and that kind of that is kind of, in a way, I think, the way that we use these masks in our social lives and in our, even, you know, in our business lives. That is a way of sort of a subtle, small kind of manipulation. And Brandon knows how to get what he wants. He knows how to.
Yeah, and there's a lot of young kids that think that they are from privilege, so they take it literally.
They think they're untouchable.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. That they're
absolutely.
They have a right to get whatever they want uh-huh. because, hey, they want it.
Absolutely.
So I think that's one of the strong parts of the play. Gets
good.
Across.
Yeah, that was a big focus of mine, is sort of showing that, trying to show that at least.
Well, let's give a little commercial for it. The play is at Steppenwolf on the main stage,
mm-hmm.
and it's Good Boys and True. And you go what? You go 8 shows a week, don't you?
We do. Yeah.
Tuesday through
Tuesday
Sunday.
Through Sunday.
Yeah.
And you do every evening. And
matinees when?
Saturdays and Sundays. We have our 3 o'clock shows. And then I believe later on in the run, we switch to Wednesday matinees. But...
It's
don't quote me on that. Check out the website.
Yeah, it's it's on our Talk Theater in Chicago website,
yeah.
and on the Steppenwolf website. Hey, you just know, they just tell you when to be there.
Exactly.
You're there,
I just
right?
show up. I just yeah. make sure I show up on time.
So let's go to your background. I mean, you're a young guy just out of college, and
that's
already
true.
You've worked at the Goodman. You've been at Steppenwolf a couple times. You've been at Chicago Shakespeare. So
I have,
give us
yeah.
your background.
Yeah. I moved up to Chicago to go to school over at Roosevelt
from?
University. From New Orleans, Louisiana.
Boy, I don't hear any New Orleans in you.
Well, Roosevelt beat that out of me pretty quick. It's an interesting accent, though, isn't it? My family was up here recently, and it was amazing how quickly it came back. It was just, you know, being around friends and family brings it out of you. But I moved up here, I guess, what, it's about 5 years ago now, a little over 5 years. And the thing about Roosevelt that was a huge decision in studying there was that they encourage working outside while you are studying there. They encourage internships. They encourage working in theaters around the city, and often kind of hook that up and sort of use that for credits towards.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's
degree.
A good idea.
Yeah, it's actually encouraged and so I was lucky enough to be able to work at a couple of theaters before I was even out of school. Before I was out of school, I'd worked at Steppenwolf and Goodman. I did Pericles with Mary Zimmerman over there.
Yes, I am.
And so that was, you know, it was fantastic because it really is learning how to apply it in the real world, because that is such a huge part of it, of forming contacts and forming good.
Well, it speaks to your talent that while you're in college, you know, you're getting to work in these kind of places.
Mm, thank you.
Because a lot of actors, you know, they would kill to work at Steppenwolf or Goodman.
Sure.
Or Shakespeare. So
it's a good place to be, absolutely,
yeah.
Without a doubt.
So you have the classical training too.
I do. Yeah, I've done a good bit of Shakespeare. That seems actually this is one of the first straight plays I've done in a few years. I was talking to a friend the other day about that, and I think. That it has to do with, I've been doing a great deal of Shakespeare recently in the last few years and in school. I think a lot of that is just, you know, Shakespeare had such dynamic young male characters, and Roosevelt was so focused in the classical training that to...
And that's the key for if you want to have a great future in acting. They say if you can do Shakespeare, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Hey. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the words of the language. I just think it was
so you did Illinois Shakespeare Festival and out in Colorado for the Shakespeare Festival.
I did. That was after my sophomore year. The dean of the program, Dr. Joel Fink, brought me out there. He was directing Romeo and Juliet. And we had done a show earlier in the year together, and we liked working with each other a whole lot, and he figured he'd bring me out to Colorado. And
it's not a bad way to spend the summer.
No, it was fantastic. I had never seen a mountain before I rolled in there.
Yeah, there aren't too many mountains in New Orleans.
No, not too many. It's pretty flat around there. Yeah. So it was, that was pretty great experience for me to be sort of at the base of the Continental Divide and be, you know, doing Shakespeare out in the mountains is pretty thrilling.
So how did you get this part in this play, other than the fact that I know they wanted you? Weren't you involved in the reading?
I was, yeah. Well, we've been workshopping this for quite some time. Me and Kelly O'Sullivan both were kind of along from the jump. And we've been going through a series of readings. They Erica Daniels contacted us and asked if we'd like to do it. And I was, yeah, absolutely. I'd be thrilled to. And sort of periodically coming back, playwright would go bring back another version and we'd read it again. And originally, Amy Morton was supposed to be directing the show, and we had met with Amy, and Amy had assembled the cast, and we ended up losing Amy because of August Osage going.
I was
going to
say she's a little busy winning her Tony.
Yeah, she's got some stuff going on; she's elsewhere. So Pam McKinnon was brought in, a fantastic director out of New York, and we kept the ball rolling. So
that's a good lesson to young actors. When people ask you to do readings, do them, because you sort of establish your role. Because I've heard this story on other parts.
Absolutely. And it was just sort of it's interesting working with the playwright as well, because a playwright will having a writer in the room with you will kind of be able to accommodate to particular types of voices and certain attitudes and certain character choices, you know, and be flexible and sort of mesh a little bit to what's appropriate to.
Well, it's a good place to make that segue into the part of your background I want to talk about too. Mm-hmm. That you are a playwright. You've written how many plays? I know a couple of screenplays and some stage plays.
Yeah, those are all through 13 Pocket, a group of mine. I've been writing for quite some time, all through high school and whatnot. And I remember my first show was actually. An adaptation of Franny and Zoe by J.D. Salinger. I put that on stage in high school. They probably thought I was a little crazy, but
that's terrific.
It's a definitely a passion of mine. It's something that I take just as seriously as the acting.
Do you think the two complement one another?
Oh, without a doubt.
So, are you a playwright who writes for actors, or that hears actors, or sees yourself in the roles?
I think that's kind of unavoidable. If you're both an actor and a writer, I mean, you would want to write roles that would sort of turn you on, I guess. But I think the acting does help the writing in a lot of ways, in the sense of being able to sort of get into these characters' heads and write very specific language for these people in these situations. You know, I think a lot of what acting is empathy and being able to put yourself in someone's shoes and try to understand them. And that's what I think good playwriting is as well, is being able to pit ideas against one another so that the better, truer idea will kind of surface and prevail.
That makes good sense. So tell us about the 13 Pocket. According to a little bit of my research, an independent artistic collection focusing on original works.
Yeah.
And you're one of the founding members.
That's right.
So tell us what the purpose of that is.
Well, 13 Pocket, basically a part of our mission is to have all original work. We always do brand new stuff. And it's also sort of coupled with the idea of an abandonment of medium. So we've alongside plays, we've let out a couple of, you know, short films. We started a group called The Cool Table. It's a sketch and improv group that's had some nice success here in the city.
Some of it's very funny, because I'm not a big fan of it, but in doing my research for this, I watched it on YouTube, some of the bits on YouTube.
Fantastic.
Some of it was
fantastic.
Good. It was very funny.
We're actually going to be at the Sketch Fest that's coming up, the Chicago Sketch Fest.
When was that?
I wish I had the dates on the top of my head.
I don't have it offhand.
But you can certainly
look. It's in January, I believe, isn't it?
It's coming up very soon.
Yeah.
Very soon. But yeah, there's plenty of information out there about Sketchfest. I mean, there's just so many groups that are performing. So, but yeah, you know, we've done art galleries. We've published a couple of small little books of poetry. We've let out a couple of experimental hip hop CDs. It's sort of, as long as it is completely original, completely new, and just an honest form of expression. Sort of embracing the idea that to focus on one medium is sort of an idea of censorship. You are sort of limiting yourself a little bit.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So that's kind of the idea.
So you're not just you're not the resident playwright. You're just a guy who writes plays for them.
I'm one of several.
Do you do the hip hop? I know you do the sketch
absolutely.
Comedy.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. All of it. Yeah. All of it. Why not? You know.
Yeah.
Let's throw it out there and see what happens. We are forming our season now. Currently, we're going to stick with a four play season this year.
That's the 13th. The 13th part.
And you can check that out at 13pocket.com. That should be. We should be having more information coming about out about that really soon. So,
do you have any works in there? When you play?
I do.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah,
great.
It's going to be a mounting of a show, Get Right, which takes place in my hometown of New Orleans, and it's actually sort of a. It's kind of, I compare it to sort of a Greek kind of tragedy, because we see sort of this doom coming in of Hurricane Katrina, from the jump. We sort of know the fate of these people and sort of hope that they make the right decisions.
Ooh.
It's about a brother and a sister who are it's basically a house full of heroin addicts, and they're sort of trying to
light entertainment.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a family comedy, very lighthearted romp.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, you check it out.
Yeah, are you scheduling it yet?
That's what we're in the midst of figuring that out. We're up to our. Up to our eyeballs in production meetings and whatnot, and trying to get together with our board and figure out what would be the best time to sort of bring all that stuff out. So
you keep yourself busy. Besides doing eight shows a week at Steppenwolf, you're writing and producing plays. You're doing the Cool Table improv sketch.
Mm-hmm. That's every Thursday night at Chicago Center for Performing Arts.
Yeah, over on Green Street. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a new show every week. We get together on Monday, and we've been doing it for about 2.5 years now. But we get together on Monday, and we write a whole new show, and then we throw it up there on Thursday. So that's a lot of fun. That's a nice little outlet for me. It's a great way to blow off some steam and get out there and with doing the dramatic stuff over here at a place like Steppenwolf.
So where do you go? You go from your show like tonight?
Absolutely.
Over the,
yeah.
Right afterward. Huh?
Yep. Yep. I'll get off stage, change my street clothes, and
talk about energy,
and hop on down the street. I mean, it's right here on Chicago.
Yeah.
Halstead,
yeah. So, you're right. You can almost walk there.
Yeah.
Not quite, but
no.
But pretty close.
Yeah.
Well, that's terrific, because I was going to ask you about that. I haven't caught that. I'll have to catch that.
Yeah,
I can confess that being older, sketch is hard for us. You know, especially if we go back to the old Second City days with the original guys.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
You get spoiled by those guys.
Oh, sure.
Not that you guys aren't
absolutely
talented, but I think that's where age comes in.
That's where
but,
the biases.
Yeah, well, but I go to every play hoping
sure
to be everything to be entertained.
Cause, well, yeah, hey, you know,
I mean,
we're trying to carry on the torch, you know.
Well,
we're trying to.
I'm going to. You got me interested. Anybody that can write a play about heroin addicts and go do comedy and then be as strong as you are at the Steppenwolf show. I mean, I got to see what you're all about.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's, you know, I love doing it. The great thing about the Cool Table, I think, is that we've sort of fallen into this great groove in the sense that we've been writing together for so long.
Who are some of the people in the group? Because I didn't recognize the faces when I was looking.
Well, there's Kyle Moore, who's a writing partner of mine, and who also went to school with me at Roosevelt. There's Dan Sanders Joyce, who's and those two are also part of 13 Pocket. David Spoli, who's a fantastic actor around the city.
Yeah, so I've seen him.
Yeah, yeah. Mary Williamson, there's Lindsay Fisher, Joey Christopoulos, Paige Smith, who I've done several shows with Paige. Let's see, Heath Courts, who's been in tons of sketch around the city. I don't want to forget anyone. It's such a huge group. It's such a gigantic group.
Well, you got most of the names.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I didn't tell you up front I was going to ask you that.
Yeah.
So you're excused,
part,
huh?
Right? I should have rehearsed that.
You got it done pretty good.
No, I think that's it. I think that's everybody.
It sounds like you're having a ball.
Trying to. You know, you work hard and play hard kind of.
All right. I always ask this question. It's a standard question.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
5 years. Where do I see myself? I would love to see myself with this 13 Pocket group a little more established, to the point where it's has a steady foundation, steady groundwork, something that's very, very tangible and has a very strong presence in the city. Me personally, with the acting, I would love to be in a position where I am supporting myself and I'm comfortable doing what I love to do. Focusing on my craft, hopefully establishing myself a little further as a writer is a big goal of mine in the next few years. I got a whole box of scripts. Just kind of waiting for the right time.
But you still want to keep acting?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Been at it since I was quite young. So,
well, there's no reason why you can't do both.
No, absolutely.
John Rieger, who's been in town for 35 years, mm-hmm. He's written many plays and still a top actor. Yeah,
yeah.
It's doable. That's Tracy Letts.
Uh-huh. Hey, that's, you know, he's an incredible guy. I got to do a show with him with Last of the Boys, the first
mm-hmm.
show that I was.
Yes, I know.
And he actually read one of a very early version of this show that's coming up, this Get Right script, and you know, was gracious enough to sort of read it and give the supernumerary intern a little bit of his time and sort of talk to me about the script a little bit. So that's
great.
Yeah, it's great to be sort of invited into this theater with these incredible artists. So,
well, you know, you're going to get honest answers with that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, keep up the good work. We need young talent, and one of the things that's making Chicago theater so vibrant is how many of you folks have been coming from other parts of the
mm-hmm.
country and coming mm-hmm. down here and doing your craft and just making it happen.
Hey,
here.
This is where it's at.
Yeah.
Theater in Chicago.
It certainly is. Well, thanks a lot, and we enjoyed the show. And thanks for listening, and remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of December 31st, 2007. Looking Glass Theatre Company continues its 20th anniversary season with the triumphant return of their hit, Hephaestus, a Greek mythology circus tale. The world's elite circus performers, including members of the Wallenda family, Ringling Brothers, and Cirque du Soleil, Hephaestus is a must-see circus theater event. Combining evocative storytelling, amazing athleticism, and high levels of circus artistry, Hephaestus was a world premiere hit for Looking Glass back in 2005. According to Greek myth, Hephaestus was born weak, disfigured, and crippled. Displeased by the sight of her son, Hera cast Hephaestus from the heavens. On Earth, Hephaestus became a great artist, forging metal into beautiful works of art. Hephaestus, a Greek mythology circus tale, follows the god of forge as he encounters sea nymphs, creates men out of steel, and falls in love with the most beautiful goddess of all. Hephaestus starts on January 9th at the Looking Glass Theatre Company. For more information on tickets, click on over to lookingglasstheater.org or Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. We have come to the end of another year of theater news and starting a whole new year of Chicago theater news and Shakespeare quotes of the week. Remember, you can find us here every year and every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next year, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Stephen Lewis Grush for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every year and every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next year, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to have a happy new year and to keep talking theater.